What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's fun. John Moody, thanks for joining us. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for coming on. Maybe you could take a moment, if you don't mind, just to let people know what you do, what keeps you busy.
Oh, well, many things, but sometimes just washing the dishes after dinner. But that's not what we're here to talk about. I worked for about 26 years for Fox News in the United States. And after that, I retired and started writing books. And I've just completed the third book, part of a trilogy about China and the Western world and how China is a threat to the Western world. So that's what keeps me busy now. And talking about that with people like you and working on the next book.
Excellent. Well, I mean, your experience at Fox News, that's fascinating to me. When did you retire?
I retired in 2018.
2018.
It was a tumultuous year for Fox. It was the year shortly after Roger Ailes was ousted as its chairman, and things started to change very quickly at Fox News. And I had built up enough time and I guess enough of a pension that I thought this was the time to make a graceful exit. As I will try to do at the end of this interview, as you were pointing out with your previous guest, there's just that awkward moment.
That's much appreciated, John. Thank you. I mean, Fox News is a very emblematic news station of America and politics, and it's been right in the thick of all, you know, so many big election cycles. And it's kind of regarded differently depending on whether you're a conservative or whether you're left-leaning liberal. I mean, what's your perception of it as a news organization in terms of objective journalism versus, say, propaganda?
Well, I guess the answer to that is it depends on what time of day you're talking about. for much of the daytime hours, Fox News is a reliable, pretty much straightforward news organization. When the evening comes and the sun begins to set, you know, the vampires come out, and there's a lot of talk shows that express opinions rather than facts that have been proven and can be shared with our audience.
That's fascinating to me because, I mean, I live in the UK, and our news media is very heavily regulated in terms of if they are emphatic with one particular viewpoint, they have to then balance it out with an opposing voice. And they can actually run into a lot of trouble financially from big, you know, regulatory bodies. They can get fines and things like that. And part of me is kind of happy for that. And part of me thinks, well, that's a free speech issue. Where do you lie in terms of regulating the media in that sense? Do you think it's a good idea to have people regulate objectivity on news channels?
No, by and large. It's always a comforting feeling to think that mummy is there to make sure that everything is all right in your life. The truth is, mummy sometimes, you know, has had a nip of gin and gone off the road a bit. I think that Ofcom is, I'll say it and I'll take whatever consequences are coming. I think that Ofcom is a terrible idea that abuses its power and abuses it with one purpose in mind, and that's to shut down one tone of voice. And that doesn't really comply with democracy the way I understand it.
No, don't worry. We're not regulated by Ofcom over. It's practically the Wild West over on YouTube, which you'll be good to know. Unless we say anything considered to be hate speech, and then maybe we'll get a visit from a UK Bobby, but seems unlikely.
I know there are limits, and I'll try to stay between the sidelines.
Wonderful. Appreciate it. So tell me about your perception of Biden then. I mean, how is he doing as a president, first of all? I mean, it seems to me that he's less exciting from a news cycle point of view. A lot of people, I think, appreciate that. A lot of people are pointing to his frailties and kind of cognitive issues that he seems to be having. What's your perception of his time in charge so far?
I think he was a necessary corrective to the four tumultuous years of Donald Trump's presidency. I think people were looking for a calmer atmosphere. I think they were looking for someone who had a track record in American politics. And say what you will, Joe Biden has been a long-standing member of the political class in the United States. He knew a lot of politicians. He knew a lot of people that politicians know. And he appeared to be this safe, sane choice. I think that he did not so much win the election as Trump lost it. If Trump had managed to actually secure his lips with a clothespin for the last 3 months of the election, he'd still be president. But Joe Biden came in and had almost an unimaginable string of bad luck. The withdrawal from Afghanistan was a national disaster. It was explained away. We couldn't have foreseen this. Well, no, of course you couldn't have foreseen a terrorist bombing that very seldom is broadcast on the news beforehand. I think that his ideas about clean energy were not enunciated clearly enough to people. Everybody wants clean skies, and everybody wants the sun to come out, and everybody wants the water to remain at the same level. But this was just taken for granted. If you don't agree with this, then you're stupid. And people, and I will only say it about Americans, don't like to be told they're stupid, even if they are, and so many of them are. And so I think that Joe Biden had good intentions. I think that he was a person of quality and of experience, but the things that he faced almost as soon as he got into office were a hurdle for anyone to get over. And he did not perform well when faced with those hurdles.
Yeah. And just as a strange curiosity, and this is, I suppose, an observation more than any sort of judgment, but I suppose in the sort of free Western world, America seems quite unique in terms of the fact that a lot of its presidents in the last several years and a lot of the presidential hopefuls seem to be in quite advanced years age-wise, and that seems to kind of seems at odds with a kind of the American attitude of young and up and coming success, and you can make it in any other area as a kind of very young motivated person, whereas in politics and the top spot, the White House, seems to predominantly be taken by men of advanced years. I mean, first of all does that ring true to you, and is there anything you can tell me that might explain that?
I think it rings very true, Stephen. Look, there's the unimaginable idea that we don't worry so much about getting reelected. We're just here to help the people and do a good job and make the world a better place. Well, none of that's true. Every politician that gets into office immediately begins to think about his or her reelection. And once you start thinking about your reelection as the most important part of your life, you're loath to give it up. And so you slowly creep to the top of your party, not completely unlike the UK. Somebody says, well, aren't you getting a little bit old? Aren't you a bit long in the tooth? And you react with indignation. And you say, that's a terrible thing to say about me. I've given my life to this country. And what people are really saying is, yeah, we know you have, and it's time to stop.
Yeah, no, that's a really good answer. So, I mean, what can you tell me about Biden and his relationship with China now? Because China's obviously, a huge threat to American security. It's a huge economic powerhouse, and I suppose it's a case of having to find this balance between finger wagging at China for things it may be culpable for or guilty of, and then maintaining this relationship so that the entire Western economic system doesn't collapse. So, I mean, what's the relationship like between America and China right now?
I think it's a master pet relationship at this moment. I think China has moved so far towards supremacy, and they've done it openly, by the way. They don't announce it in their newspapers, but it's so clear if you follow the movements of Xi Jinping, who's the ultimate leader in China, and his cohorts, that China wants to become the world's one superpower. They've had enough of the United States. They think the United States is in fatal decline. And all of their indications are that they want to be the most powerful country on the face of the earth. And they have a good chance of doing it. So what is the relationship? I think that when we saw Joe Biden meet Xi Jinping in San Francisco in November of last year, we got a pretty good idea of it. It's always important not to just look at the event itself, but the advance work that went on before the event. And before Xi Jinping agreed to meet Biden in San Francisco, his advance team said, here's what we want. When President Xi lands at San Francisco Airport, we want him to be met by a military armed guard to welcome him to the United States. As he comes into the city on his motorcade, we want crowds of adoring people waving only Chinese flags, only, no American flags, to be there to welcome him on the sides of the streets as his motorcade passed. They said, okay, we'll do that. That evening, when he addressed a lot of tech CEOs of American companies, before he even said a word, as he was walking to the stage to begin his remarks, the CEOs and everybody else in that room stood up and gave him a standing ovation. Now, these are signals, and these are not signals that a pro like Xi Jinping is going to misunderstand. That was that those signals were, you know, we don't like everything you're doing, and we wish you'd stop torturing and exterminating Uyghurs in the Xinjiang province. And we sort of wish you'd stop threatening Taiwan because it's really causing us to stay up at night and think about it. But in the meantime, as long as we can make money off you, yeah, you're welcome. Of course you can. Yeah, do whatever you want. Xi Jinping told Biden at that meeting, we would really, really like to take over Taiwan peacefully. And Biden said, yes, I see that. No. You don't take over Taiwan. It's a country. And you know, whether you say it or not, the United States is going to defend Taiwan if you start military action against it. And so that tepid response and the sort of half head shake were another signal that Xi took back to Beijing and is now in a position of unquestioned authority in China and can pretty much do whatever he dares do.
Yeah, I mean, That's fascinating in terms of how we kind of put aside all the human rights violations. You mentioned the Uyghurs there, of course. And I mean, just the animal rights record is enough for me to kind of make my head spin. We put all that aside. I mean, in the West, we kind of talk a good game about how committed we are to humanitarianism, you know, resourcefulness and, you know, climate change and things like that. Yet we kind of buddy up with China, who seems to be the antithesis of all them things. And I suppose my question is, in a roundabout way, if any other nation was responsible for unleashing a virus that caused a global pandemic, you know, millions dead, you know, end of, you know, economies, people are still suffering today financially and through their health, do you think they would have just got away with it as easy as China appears to have? It seems to me that there have been zero ramifications for that whatsoever.
Well, you've raised the topic, so I'll try to answer it. That was the theme of the first of the three books that I wrote about China and the Western world. You know, who created this virus and what are we supposed to call it? And once again, the world, I'm using the world in parentheses, the world stepped in and said, well, let's just call it COVID because nobody knows what that means. And everybody said, okay, yeah, that's fine, good. United Nations said that, okay. Center for Disease Control in the United States said, okay. And all the news media in the United States said, sure, whatever you say. Yeah, we don't want to upset China. That might be racist. It was a power play and they got away with it. And so once again, a signal was sent to Xi Jinping, go for it, do whatever you want. Nobody's going to stop you.
Yeah, no, I remember that at the time. Obviously any kind of criticism we put, you know, you're putting the racist basket just for kind of pointing out the origin of something, which is very strange. But in terms of like China as this huge superpower, obviously people tend to fear their military might. There was a report recently in Bloomberg, however, that kind of made the case that there's so much corruption within China that it may pose a problem for them militarily if there ever were to be need for, you know, military action from China. Is that something you've been keeping an eye on? What are your opinions on that?
Yeah, that Bloomberg article was very important because it was based on reporting. It wasn't just based on what they wish was true, and it wasn't these unnamed sources, et cetera. What they found were documents that showed that the Chinese military suppliers, most of whom are incorporated into the People's Liberation Army, were doing things like sending shells, military explosive shells, to the People's Liberation Army to be launched from the ground, from silos. And their warheads were filled with water, not with explosives, because it was cheaper and they got away with it. There were stories about soldiers being sent rags instead of uniforms by these suppliers. And the soldiers would complain about it, and their commanding officers, who were getting a kickback from this deal, told them to shut up and obey orders. So, yes, I think there are now, and this reached Xi Jinping, of course, and he is now undertaking a purge of some of the senior military leaders. The problem is that he appointed most of them himself. So, you know, keep your friends closer and your enemies for closer, whatever that saying is. And now he has to undo that and go to all these people that he appointed, who are his cronies, and say, I appointed you to do a good job and to keep the corruption to a minimum, and now you're embarrassing me. Yeah, that's what happens when you appoint bad people. So, yeah, that's where that is. There are questions about whether China's ready to fight an all-out war. And by all-out, I mean to invade and conquer Taiwan. I don't think China wants or would ever allow itself to become involved in a war directly against the United States. It would always be with Taiwan as the excuse and American aid coming into play.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose when we look at sort of tyrants in the Middle East and people who have a terrible human rights record, and we have to play nice with them because perhaps we're reliant on oil for fuel and things like that. And it seems like perhaps one day, if this isn't just complete utopian thinking, there may be a source of green energy perhaps where we can cut ties with people like Saudi Arabia and not have to play nice with them because we can become self-sufficient with some sort of green fuel. In terms of China, what are we most reliant on there? It seems far more complicated and far more embedded into our economic systems than, say, just an energy source, perhaps. I mean, what are some of their main exports that we rely on?
Well, I mean, almost everything. Try to go a day, Stephen, without buying a product that was made in China. You can't do it unless you bury yourself in a hole. China has identified a weakness of capitalism, which is everybody wants something that's cheap. And they will buy whatever is cheap and not very good, and that includes most Chinese products, because, you know, they save 25 pence on it. It's just a failing of people that live in a free Western capitalistic society that they've come to the point of saying, you know, I don't care where it comes from. I don't care. I just want it cheap. Well, if you don't care where it comes from, then don't be surprised if one day Xi Jinping says, I'm in control of you now. Do what I tell you. What kind of products, among others? Cars. China is now making cars and exporting them at an enormous rate. They exported 4.4 million cars in 2023, and they're on schedule to export 5 million cars this year. That will make them the largest exporter of cars in the world, way surpassing Japanese cars. So, and then I guess the point that I'd like to segue into, if possible, is that the Chinese development of artificial intelligence is moving much, much faster than anything that's happening in the United States or Australia or Europe. And China is not restricted by these concerns. Oh, we have to have guardrails on what AI can do because we wouldn't want them to take over. China doesn't care. In fact, they would like AI to take over on every issue that affects the Western world. And that's the topic of my most recent book.
How much of a danger does AI represent to us then? Because I try and read about it as much as I can. I have a basic understanding of what it can be used for and what the implications, of course, can be. I mean, we just had some huge news come out the other day from Microsoft that perhaps they've used AI to kind of tell us what would be the correct amount of ingredients to produce some extremely durable and longer lasting lithium battery. Perhaps it's, you know, the computation power it would have taken, or the manpower rather, to get there was much longer than AI managed to do it in. So that's kind of a work in progress. Everyone who's an expert in AI seems to be terrified of the thing. How much of a role do you think AI is going to play in terms of, you know, global conflict?
Well, let me answer that with 2 points. One, the experts that you mentioned are largely fakers. They say there's an expert. There's no test for that. There's no way of proving it. You don't get a diploma that says expert on it. So most of them are doing what they think is good for them or for the company that they work for. And whether it's good for mankind is way down on their list of importance. Now, as to what AI can do, we have to face it. I mean, some of the great thinkers of all time, Socrates, Cicero, Albert Einstein, etc., Oppenheimer, of the most recent movie fame, you know, were geniuses. But they couldn't even begin to compete against an AI program. They're too fast. They're too perfect. They don't make mistakes. They don't need lunch. They don't get vacation. They don't do what their boss says. They just do it. And we can never compete with that. It's like those famous chess matches where Bobby Fischer played against a robot, or a computer rather, played chess against them. And he was destroyed because thinking is involved in chess until it's not. The AI machine just goes, yep, got it, got next. Okay, got. And at the same time, somebody, you know, a human is saying, excuse me, I just need to cough for a second. Well, while you had that little cough, a decision got made that you can't do anything about. So AI is a little bit like saying, is it good for us to go into outer space? I can't answer that question. We're there. We're doing things. We landed on the moon, which is an amazing accomplishment. But at the same time, we've now polluted outer space with satellites and garbage that's out there. So was it a good idea to go there or not? And what's the effect on the climate in America or in the rest of the world? We don't know these things. And at the same time, governments, well-intentioned governments, are saying, this is the race to the future. Future of what? They don't know. They're not experts.
What's your prognosis then, humanity-wise? I mean, we haven't been here for particularly long in the eight, you know, however long the Earth's been here. I mean, it seems like we know we won't always be here. What do you see in the future for us? Are you hopeful that if we can survive natural disasters and, you know, pandemics, that perhaps we can avoid killing each other to extermination?
Well, I don't want to use cliches, and I don't want to be misinterpreted as an idealist. I believe in God. I believe there is a God, and I hope that God protects us from ourselves. You know, we've been told so many times that this is the end of humanity. Climate change is the end of humanity. Donald Trump is the end of humanity. Nuclear weapons are the end of humanity. Well, we've gotten through them so far, but that doesn't mean that our luck will continue. And AI is definitely a potential threat to humanity because it is so superior to the human mind. I mean, even great writers, not including myself, but, you know, great writers, are a little bit worried that AI can write better than they can. And again, the reader, if he or she can get a book that costs 25% of what a new author's book costs, I don't care where it came from, I'm just going to read it. Well, that's very short-sighted, and pretty soon you're going to be reading books by AQ23567. And it's not a good idea.
Well, that brings me nicely on to a question from Carol Q121 in the chat. Unsurprisingly, a lot of people are fascinated with your time at Fox News. They've asked, in what aspect would you say the biggest change has been from when you first joined Fox to when you left?
Oh, wow. The founding chairman of Fox News was Roger Ailes, a very many-dimensional, let's call him, man. He certainly had some personal failings, which we all have heard about and seen movies about, etc. But he was a leader, and he knew how to lead, and he knew how to create a workforce that was all in sync with his ideas. And that's what made Fox News so powerful in the early days. The change you've mentioned, changes. I have to say that I think that when Donald Trump announced his candidacy for the presidency and cozied up as much as he tried to do to Rupert Murdoch, that it had perhaps an unintended effect on the coverage of politics in Fox News. And when Trump inevitably said, "Hey, look, you know, we're friends and we're colleagues, but you do what I say. I'm the most important one here, not Fox." And started saying that, Rupert Murdoch and others just said, "Oh, Donald, no, that's not how it works. It's friendship, actually. It's not master pet relationships." And so that's what caused them to do this pirouette and start to become very critical of Donald Trump. And I think many people have noticed that they first tried to back DeSantis for the nomination. And I think now they're sort of pushing Nikki Haley, none of which is good for news coverage. You're supposed to be objective about it. But certainly they've taken a big turn. And now, I think tonight, in fact, in America, Donald Trump's going to be doing a town hall meeting on Fox while DeSantis and Haley pretend to have a debate on another network. So he had a huge effect on how Fox does things. And I just can't discount the importance of leadership.
That's a great answer. A Nexus has asked a good question. Does Mr. Moody see how the Chinese Communist Party already has done a soft conquering of the West?
Yes, I certainly do. And great question. You call it soft, but you know, soft eventually hardens into bricks. And that's what we're looking at down the road. China, here's the thing to remember about China. They have become part of the world economy, as you mentioned earlier, Stephen. But so therefore we assume that they're going to play by the same rules as everybody else. They don't. They cheat. They lie. That's two hallmarks of Chinese policy toward the rest of the world. They cheat and then they lie. Wait a minute. You said you were going to allow our products in, but now you're only allowing our products in if we make them in China and share the profits with you. You didn't say that before. Yes, we did. Oh yeah, you missed it. No, it's there. Yeah, we said that. They cheat and they lie. I mean, that's what you can always count on when you're dealing with somebody from the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. I mean, what are the solutions here then? Because as you've already eloquently pointed out, we're so reliant on them for so many things. It seems to me that perhaps the horse has already bolted in that regard. Are we just in the pocket of China forevermore now? Are there legitimate ways in which we could kind of reverse the process?
We can all take a deep breath and look at where these products are made and not buy something that's made in China. Now, I know they're going, "Oh, I can't do that. It's too far gone." Da-da. Look, everybody says, "I can't do it. It's too big for me to handle." No, it's not. Just stop buying that stuff. You'll be happier. You'll be more patriotic. And you might be making a change in the world when you don't even know what's going on.
That's a great answer as well. And obviously it takes kind of grassroots action, doesn't it, to make any sort of change? Just a bit of a left field one. I just want to get your perception on something that was big news, making headlines not so long ago, but seems to have kind of died and gone away. It was these, you know, quote unquote Chinese spy balloons that were in the sky in America. And there was a lot of security, you know, panic and concern, a lot of debate about them afterwards. What's your perception of what was going on there? Is it far more sinister than people realize, or is it kind of overblown?
Americans have the memory span of a hummingbird. For 5 days, the news media led us around and showed us pictures of these balloons and said, oh, my goodness, who could ever have believed that they would use balloons against us? Well, you know, it's not the Wizard of Oz. These are military balloons. and then they shot it down, which was well overdue. I'll say this about President Biden. I think that his decision to shoot down the balloon over the ocean was the right one. It could have caused death and damage, and he, in that respect, his judgment was what showed through. But he did shoot it down. China was outraged. How can you do that to an innocent weather balloon? You know, weather balloons have feelings too. They're humans. No, they're not. No. And so our attention span is so limited these days. You know, we can't bother to continue to be interested in China and whether it's a threat to us, because we have to see who won the Golden Bachelor show. You know, these things are so misplaced in their level of importance that we are doing to ourselves what we fear China might be able to do. You know, I believe it was Lenin who said, we will sell the capitalists the rope with which they will hang themselves. They're doing it. And we don't even know that. And by the way, Lenin was not just a Beatle. He was somebody else.
It's a big Lebowski joke in there somewhere. But John, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm very, you know, grateful for you to bring your experience and expertise to this show and share your knowledge on China. Is there anything else you'd like to point people towards before I let you get back to your day? And where can people find more of your writing and work?
Well, yeah, the books are all available on the usual sources, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Books, et cetera. I would just say that if you are thinking about buying any of my books or any other books, if you have an independent independent bookstore in your neighborhood, ask them to stock it, buy it there. We have to keep these guys in business. We're dying otherwise, and you don't want Amazon to be the only source of books in the world, because the next thing you know, they'll be deciding what books are good.
That's a great point, John. Thank you very much for joining us. I've really enjoyed speaking to you.
So did I, Stephen. Thank you.
Have a good day.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.